Welcome to the deep dive. Think about this. Can the way a government puts down a rebellion plant seeds of resentment that sprout decades later?
In really unexpected ways.
Yeah, that's really the core of what we're digging into today.
The surprising long-term impact of, well, historical conflict on political leanings.
Exactly. We tend to focus on the here and now, you know, with political attitudes, but history, it has an incredible reach. We've got this fascinating study in front of us that connects a really violent chapter in 19th century Italy to how people voted in a huge election almost a century later.
Okay, let's unpack this. So the stage is set during a unification of Italy back in the 1860s. For many, this is a dream come true, But down south, in the southern provinces, the arrival of the Savoy monarchy, it sparked this fierce, really bloody reaction.
The Great Brigandage.
Yeah, it's it.
And this wasn't just like a few disgruntled folks. It was a widespread guerrilla war across the south, fueled by a whole cocktail of reasons, really.
Like what?
Well, you had loyalty to the old regime, the ousted rulers, then disappointment with the new one, maybe unmet expectations, and also just very real economic struggles for many people. It was a tough transition.
And this deep dive, we're going to trace a line from that 19th century upheaval all the way to 1946.
Right, the referendum.
Where Italians had to decide, monarchy or republic. And to make that link, the researchers, they really dug into some amazing historical material, didn't they?
Oh, absolutely. They pulled together really detailed records of brigandage activity. We're talking 1861 to 1870, and combined that with the voting results from that crucial 1946 referendum.
Yeah.
It's a powerful mix, yeah. Historical turmoil and its potential long-term political fallout.
So our mission today is to figure out if, and maybe how, the way the new Italian monarchy handled this great brigandage, if that shaped how people in southern Italy felt about having a king almost 80 years later.
It's a fascinating question.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Let's go back to the 1860s. What exactly was the Great Brigandage all about?
Well, the unification of Italy under the Savoy crown, it sort of culminated in 1861. But while the idea of a unified nation, you know, resonated with many.
Especially in the north, maybe.
Generally, yeah. The southern provinces, which had been the kingdom of the two Sicilies, they didn't necessarily share that same enthusiasm. The new administration from the north, it brought changes, new taxes, compulsory military service, things that often weren't popular.
I can imagine.
And these shifts plus disruptions to like existing agricultural markets, they created this fertile ground for discontent.
So the honeymoon period was pretty short-lived. Sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned a diverse group involved in this uprising.
Yeah.
Who were these so-called brigands?
It was a really complex mix, actually. You had, yes, actual criminals, sure, but also former soldiers of the old Bourbon army still loyal to the deposed royal family.
Okay.
Then you had peasants and shepherds who felt left behind, maybe ignored by the new state. And even some members of the old southern nobility got involved. They formed themselves into bands.
Right.
Using the really rugged mountainous terrain of the south to launch guerrilla attacks against the new authorities.
Sounds like a serious headache for the brand new Italian state.
Yeah.
How did they try to put this down?
Their response was, well, forceful is putting it mildly. The Italian state deployed a massive military presence. At its peak, maybe around 90,000 soldiers.
90,000, wow.
Yeah, huge numbers sent down to crush the rebellion. And they used some very harsh methods, public executions, for instance.
Oh.
And they even displayed the bodies, sometimes using photographs to amplify the message, make it spread further.
That's brutal.
They also restricted people's movements, like they prohibited the transhumance, the traditional seasonal migration of sheep.
Which would have hit shepherds hard.
Devastated many rural communities, yeah. It cut off their livelihood.
That must have created a huge amount of resentment beyond just the fighting itself.
Absolutely. And on top of that, entire communities could be held responsible for the actions of individuals. Clear case of collective punishment.
Guilt by association.
Pretty much. And then in 1863, the government declared martial law the Leg Pica.
Leg Pica, okay.
In 11 southern provinces, they considered infested by brigands. This effectively suspended civil liberties, allowed military courts to try and execute anyone accused of being a brigand or even just helping them.
11 provinces under martial law, that's a huge chunk of southern Italy. It paints a picture of a really, really tough crackdown.
It was, definitely. And while the brigandage itself was largely suppressed by, say, 1870, the memory of that violence, that repression, it didn't just vanish.
No, I bet not.
It lived on in the collective memory of the South, often passed down through, you know, oral stories, folk songs, legends.
Right.
And interestingly, in some of these tales, the brigands were even kind of romanticized, seen as heroes or figures of resistance against the invaders from the north.
The research quotes Francesco Saverio Nicusi, saying that for the southern working class, the brigand was often seen as an avenger, maybe even justice itself.
Yeah, that really shows you how the narrative around this period got complicated and how it had staying power.
Okay, so let's jump forward. Almost 80 years. It's 1946. Italy's been through fascism, World War II, so much. Tell us about this referendum.
The 1946 referendum was a massive moment, a watershed. After the horrors of fascism and the war, Italy had to decide its future. What kind of government did it want?
Big question.
Should it stay a monarchy under the Savoy dynasty, the same family that oversaw unification and, well, the fascist era, or should it become a republic? And crucially, this was the first election in Italy with universal suffrage.
Everyone gets a vote.
Every adult citizen, men and women. A huge step.
What was the political mood like then? Was there a clear consensus on this monarchy issue?
Oh, far from it. The political landscape was deeply divided. The Christian Democrats, who were becoming a major force, they officially stayed neutral on the monarchy question, gave their voters a free choice.
Interesting.
But the Communist and Socialist parties were strongly campaigning for a republic. On the other side, support for keeping the monarchy came from conservative groups, parts of the Catholic Church, and obviously dedicated monarchist parties.
And how did the vote actually tally up, geographically speaking? Was it pretty uniform across the country?
Not at all. There was a very distinct north-south split. Really stark. Yep. The northern regions overwhelmingly voted for a republic, while the southern regions largely favored keeping the monarchy.
So the opposite of the brigandage era in terms of alignment with the state.
In a way, yeah, it's complex. But it wasn't a completely rigid division either. You had provinces in the north that actually voted for the monarchy and vice versa in the south. Like Cuneo in the north went for the monarchy while Pescara down south voted for a republic.
So even with that general trend, there were these local variations. What was the final result of this landmark vote?
In the end, the republic won, secured 54.3% of the national vote.
Close, but decisive.
Decisive enough, it marked the end of the Italian monarchy and, you know, the birth of the modern Italian Republic we know today.
Okay, so we have this intense conflict, the brigandage, in the 1860s in the South. And then decades later, this clear regional divide in the 1946 vote on the monarchy. This is where the study steps in to connect those dots, right?
Exactly.
How did they go about linking these two, well, seemingly pretty separate periods?
The researchers used a really careful approach. Basically, they compared municipalities in southern Italy that did experience brigandage between 1861 and 1870 with those that didn't.
Okay.
And they used statistical methods regressions to control for a whole load of other factors that could have influenced voting patterns later on.
Like what sort of things?
Oh, things like geography, population makeup, economic conditions before unification even happened, provincial differences. Lots of controls.
Trying to isolate the effect.
Exactly. And to really nail down the effect of the brigandage, they even used this clever technique, an instrumental variable, it's called. They looked at the presence of really rough, forested terrain mountains and forests.
The kind of place brigands would hide out.
Precisely. The thinking is that kind of terrain likely influenced where brigands could operate back then, but it wouldn't directly influence how people voted 80 years later. Except through the experience of the brigandage and the repression it brought.
Ah, I see. It's like finding a natural experiment within history.
Yeah.
Clever.
It is pretty clever, yeah.
So what did this in-depth analysis reveal? What were the main findings when they crunched all that data?
Well, the main finding is quite compelling, really striking, actually. Municipalities that had experienced more intense brigandage in the 1860s, whether you measure it by how frequent it was or just whether it occurred there at all.
Yeah.
Those places showed lower rates of voter turnout in the 1946 referendum, and crucially, they were significantly less likely to vote in favor of keeping the monarchy.
Less turnout and less support for the king.
Exactly. And the size of this effect, it wasn't trivial. It was economically and politically significant.
That's a pretty amazing link across such a long stretch of time. Did they see similar trends in the elections for the Constituent Assembly, the one that happened at the same time to write the new constitution?
Yes, they did. Good point. In those same areas with higher brigandage, historically, there was also less support for the political parties that openly backed the monarchy in that assembly election.
Okay.
And conversely, more support for parties that were against the monarchy. The picture was a little more nuanced for the Christian Democrats, remember, since they were officially neutral on the monarchy itself.
Right, the free vote thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the study also looks specifically at the impact of that martial law, the leg pica, using something called a spatial regression discontinuity design. Sounds complicated.
It's a bit technical, but the idea is pretty neat. Remember, the leg pica was enforced in 11 specific provinces, but not in the neighboring ones.
Okay.
So the researchers compared areas right on either side of those provincial borders. One side was under martial law, the other wasn't, but otherwise they were likely quite similar places. And what they found was that within those provinces under martial law, especially in areas further away from the border, where the repression was likely more severe, less easy to escape, there was a substantial decrease in votes for the monarchy compared to similar areas just across the border where martial law wasn't in effect.
Wow. So it wasn't just the initial conflict, the brigandage itself, but the really heavy-handed response from the state that seems to have left this lasting anti-monarchy imprint.
Precisely. That seems to be a key part of the story. And what's also interesting is that while imposing martial law actually led to a slight increase in overall voter turnout in those areas on average.
Oh, really? Why?
Maybe it signaled the importance of the state or mobilized people in some way. It's hard to say for sure.
Yeah.
But the key point is, even with slightly higher turnout, the stronger anti-monarchic sentiment in the most heavily repressed zones suggests this wasn't just about, say, general distrust of state power.
Right.
It seems to have been a more direct negative reaction specifically targeted towards the monarchy, the institution associated with that repression.
Okay, so we see this connection. The data seems pretty strong. How do the researchers actually explain this long-term effect? What's the mechanism, you know, that could account for this impact lasting decades?
Their interpretation really centers on the idea of collective memory and something they call latent preferences.
Latent preferences.
Yeah. The thinking goes like this. The brutal conflict and its repression severely damaged or compromised the traditional legitimacy of the monarchy in those specific regions.
Okay.
Even after the brigandage was defeated, negative feelings toward the ruling Savoy dynasty seem to have been passed down through generations, maybe through stories, family histories, local identity.
Right, like we mentioned earlier with the folklore.
Exactly. Essentially, it's like a seed of political opinion planted by historical trauma that lies dormant for a long time.
Dormant because it was risky to express it.
That's the idea. Under the monarchy, especially after these failed uprisings, openly opposing the king or the institution could have had real consequences. Social pressure, maybe worse. So these preferences might have remained latent present, but not really visible or acted upon publicly.
Hidden opinions, sort of?
Pretty much, yeah. But then, when the 1946 referendum came along, offering a free, secret ballot, universal suffrage.
The cost of expressing dissent dropped.
Exactly. The cost went way down. And suddenly, those long-held, maybe subconscious anti-monarchic sentiments, shaped by the historical memory of the brigandage and its repression, could finally surface and be expressed in the vote against the monarchy.
That makes a lot of sense. It connects the history to the moment the preference could actually be revealed. Now, the researchers also considered whether this vote against the monarchy in 46 was simply a reflection of anti-fascist feelings, right?
Yeah.
Given the king's role during Mussolini's regime.
Yes, that's a really important alternative explanation they had to check.
And what did they find on that front?
They specifically investigated that. They looked at things like crime rates and instances of actual fascist violence in those same areas during the 1920s, the height of fascism.
Okay.
And they found no detectable link between where brigandage had happened 60 years earlier and where fascist violence or related crime was higher later on.
So the pattern didn't match up.
Right. Which suggests that the anti-monarchic vote in 46 wasn't just a proxy for general anti-fascist sentiment pleading over. It seems to be tied more specifically to that earlier historical grievance connected to the monarchy itself.
That's a crucial distinction to make.
Right.
Okay, so wrapping this part up, what's the main takeaway from all of this? What does this tell us about the enduring consequences of how governments handle internal conflict?
I think the core takeaway is pretty stark. The Great Brigandage, and perhaps especially the harsh way it was suppressed in southern Italy, had this surprisingly long shadow. It shaped political attitudes against the monarchy, specifically, that didn't fully manifest until nearly a century later in that crucial 1946 referendum. This study isn't just, you know, dusty history.
No.
It's a powerful reminder that how power responds to dissent, how states handle internal conflict, can echo through generations. It can subtly shape the very foundations of political legitimacy for decades to come.
They even did a kind of rough calculation, didn't they, to see what might have happened nationally if the brigandage hadn't occurred or hadn't been repressed so harshly?
Yeah, a back-of-the-envelope calculation, basically. A what if.
What did that suggest?
Well, their estimates suggest that even without the specific impact of the brigandage in the South, the monarchy might have gained some additional votes in that region, maybe closed the gap a little, but the Republic likely would have still won the national vote overall. So while the Great Brigandage and its repression clearly had a significant measurable impact on the regional vote in the South, it probably wasn't the single deciding factor in the overall national outcome changing from monarchy to republic. Still, it undeniably left a deep and lasting scar on the political landscape of southern Italy.
It really drives home the point, though, that how a state deals with these internal challenges can have repercussions that extend way beyond the immediate crisis. So, thinking bigger picture, what are the broader implications here? Are there lessons we might see playing out elsewhere?
Oh, absolutely. I think this research strongly suggests that state repression, especially when linked to a specific regime or institution like a monarchy, can have these very long-term consequences for legitimacy, particularly when eventually people get the chance to express their views freely, like in that 1946 vote. It raises some really profound questions, doesn't it, about how other historical conflicts and the way they were managed might still be subtly influencing political landscapes today in all sorts of unexpected ways in different countries around the world.
It certainly gives you food for thought about other historical flashpoints, maybe things we don't even connect directly to current politics, but maybe we should.
Exactly. The echoes can be faint, but they might still be there.
Well, this deep dive into the sources really underscores the enduring power of history and collective memory.
It really does.
If you listening are keen to delve even further into this fascinating research, and there's a lot more detail in the actual study.
Oh, yeah, much more. It's complete stuff, obviously.
We definitely encourage you to explore the cited work for a more comprehensive understanding of all the nuances and additional findings. It's well worth it. Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive.